Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
And welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. Jason Mackey in for the guys. Austin Bechtold producing. You know that music. That is Mr. Rogers is changing his sweater and putting his shoes on, apparently. What are you guys doing with that music?
It's everyone loves Raymond's music. Ray knows.
I guess that tells you how much everybody loves Raymond I watch. Raymond.
Somehow Jason managed to confuse Mr. Rogers with Everybody Loves Raymond.
How did that happen, Austin, Ray?
I've never seen Everybody Loved Raymond.
Ray, that's crazy. Everyone knows Mr. Rogers. Jason, come on, Jason.
I didn't confuse Mr. Rogers. I know who Mr. Rogers is. I didn't know the theme song from Everybody Loves Raymond. Now it makes sense. I didn't understand. Now I understand. I've been enlightened. Thank you, Limits.
I gotcha.
Anyway, what a transition. Ray Fittipaldo is brought to you by the Western PA Injury Attorneys of LGKG, serving as your home team for over 90 years, LGKG.com. We find Ray Fittipaldo amid sort of a quiet period for the Steelers. It's never that quiet. Ray, I want to get into this a little bit later. Did you see James Harrison's comments on the Nightcap video stream with Hushman Zada?
I did not, no.
Okay. All right. Well, he was comparing Mike Tomlin to Bill Cowher. And I do think there's some irony there. You know, I think James Harrison probably took advantage of that a little bit. But Tomlin being too much of a player's coach, do you think that's a fair criticism of Mike?
Yeah, I think in certain instances, it is. I think if you look back at the careers of certain players, I think, you know, where Mike wants to be understanding and give guys some freedom, I think he's been a little bit lax sometimes with some of those guys taking advantage of that. And the guy who always comes to mind for me is Antonio Brown. And, you know, we know how that ended back in 2018. And honestly, there's been other instances as well. But, you know, I sort of get James. He's one of those guys from that era who played for Bill, but he also played a long time for Mike too. So he's certainly a good guy who could sort of draw comparisons and, contrast with those guys as well.
Yeah, I mean, I understood what Harrison was saying there, and I mostly agree with him. I do think that's a criticism of Tomlin that, you know, I wish he was a little bit tougher. But one thing I disagreed with Harrison on, Ray, he said if this goes poorly, he could see them cutting ties with Aaron Rodgers in the middle of the season. I don't see that, and I want to frame the question to you this way. If it does go poorly, you know, how do you see that looking? They'll probably ride it out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And by poorly, what does that mean? I mean, if they're 2-6 at the halfway point, I mean, Jason, you know, way back in 2013, a little bit more than a decade ago, they started 0-4 and 2-6, and they almost snuck into the playoffs.
Yeah.
So they're never going to give up on a season. Even if it does go bad, they'll likely stick with Rodgers and believe they can ride it out and, you know, get to a point where he can lead them to winning games. But I don't see that happening. They wanted Aaron for a reason, and they're going to stick it out with him as long as necessary.
Pomp and Joe Show, Jason Mackey in for the guys. We're chatting with Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette. Read his work, of course, at post-gazette.com. You can follow Ray on X at RayFit1. Ray, another thing about Aaron Rodgers, I was struck with his appearance on McAfee basically setting up that this would be his last year. I know I'm swinging the pendulum the complete other way, but if this goes well, do you think there's a world where Aaron Rodgers could want to come back? Like if they win, you know, 10, 11 games, get a playoff win, he plays well. Do you think they could, one, the Steelers welcome him back, and two, Aaron want to come back?
Well, it doesn't sound like it from the way Aaron is talking right now. It sounds like he's very much at peace with this being his last season in Pittsburgh. And I understand that the way his 2-year stint in New York, began and ended. You know, there wasn't really a lot of good in there. But listen, if your scenario is correct, let's say they They win 11 games. They're a road team in the wild card round, and they win a game. Maybe he would get the itch to come back, and maybe in that circumstance, you know, wouldn't deter the Steelers from drafting a quarterback. But maybe in that circumstance, they could say, hey, let's do this again, $10 million a year, and you can groom the next guy. So I don't think that's in either of their minds right now. But in your circumstance, yeah, I could see that coming together. I don't think Aaron is in that place right now.
Ray, it's June 27th, man. We got to come up with some hypotheticals, right? I mean, that's what we're doing here for the next month. Speaking of which, TJ Watt, what's the latest on him? And what is your expectation with Watt, both in terms of a contract and reporting to training camp next month?
Yeah, nothing new now. You know, pretty much the entire NFL is on vacation from now until the middle of July. So all those guys are taking time off, agents and front office personnel included. As far as my expectation for a contract go, I think it's going to get done eventually, Jason, but I don't have any real timetable, and I do not have a feel right now, and there hasn't really been any leaks from the agents about this. You know, guys like Terry McLaurin, TJ Watt, a lot of guys held out during minicamp. No one has really tipped their hand and say, okay, we're going to hold in, we're going to report and be a good soldier, or we're going to play hardball and hold out. And really, the last time a Steelers player played hardball was Le'Veon Bell back in 2017. And, I'm not drawing comparisons between TJ and Le'Veon, but that was the last time we had a high-profile contract holdout. We've had hold-ins since then, but we really haven't had a holdout, I think, in the last 7 or 8 years.
Devil's advocate, Ray, and I don't know how I feel about this. I'm just, I think this is something that people wonder. Why not just let TJ play out his contract and then franchise tag him? That is within the Steelers' rights. I don't think it's something they're going to do. But why wouldn't a team do that?
I just they don't think it's good business. I think the NFLPA and the players have said this for a long time, Jason. They cannot stand the franchise tag. They would like to get rid of it. And I think it's okay. I think they realize, hey, if you're coming off a rookie contract, they understand that's part of it. But to do that to a veteran, to put him in that situation where he's got to go year to year, those guys want security. Those guys want that money up front. And to do that, I don't think it would be good business. But you're right. It's well within their, their parameters. They can certainly do that. And people forget, you could put the franchise tag on him and then work for the next 4 or 5 months towards training camp to getting a deal done. So it doesn't have to be acrimonious, but in most cases when teams do that, it does become acrimonious, and it doesn't always end well.
Acrimonious, that's a good word, Ray. That's a 10-cent word. It might be a 25-cent word. Very impressive.
That's my SAT word for the day.
I love it. I love it. Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette joining us here on the Pomp and Joe Show. Another question about Aaron Rodgers, Ray, and this was, I know we didn't have a lot of time at the UPMC Rooney Sports Complex, but one of the conversation topics was the amount of autonomy Aaron Rodgers is going to have in the offense with Arthur Smith and how those two are going to work together. What was your takeaway on that? Do you expect kind of a different working relationship between Aaron and Arthur Smith this year?
I do, and Aaron made it a point in that interview to say he's going to learn the offense, and he's going to ask Arthur to put certain things in, but he made it a point to say this is Arthur's offense. I retweeted something yesterday that Ryan Switzer posted about the 2018 season. It was about just like the video game seasons that AB and Juju had there. Like AB had like 1,800 yards, Juju had like 1,500, and it was a spectacular offensive season for the Steelers. Now they didn't make the playoffs because the defense was bad, but it was a great offensive year. And I retweeted Switzer because he said Ben called half that season by himself. And that was Randy Fietner's first season as OC. And the reason I retweeted it, I'm just the storyline of, and it's not just Arthur Smith, okay? It's every offensive coordinator, every coach in the NFL now. They don't want to give their quarterbacks that freedom. You remember Matt Canada took away that freedom from Ben Roethlisberger, you know, back in, you know, his first season, I think it was 2021. You know, Ben didn't have the same freedoms. Now, you know, Ben ignored that and he did it on his own, but the point is they tried to take it away. So I blame Mike Tomlin. I blame all these other coaches for wanting to micromanage things. I just think football is better when you had quarterbacks being able to use their smarts, their brains at the line of scrimmage. Now, not everyone can do it, but certainly Aaron Rodgers can do it. And I think the Steelers will eventually come around to that. I just think it's going to take some time for he and Arthur to work that out.
Yeah, I mean, they better. To me, that was senseless the way they handled things with Russell Wilson. You bring in a veteran quarterback, let him be a veteran quarterback. If you're going to sign Aaron Rodgers, let him be Aaron Rodgers. I don't understand that. So, all right, a couple more points with Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette before we let Ray go. Wide receiver two, Ray, is there a world where Calvin Austin III and Roman Wilson become that guy, or is your expectation still that they bring in somebody at some point before Latrobe?
Yeah, I mean, Jason, I think they'll bring in somebody, but I don't know that that guy has to project as the number two. I could very much see a situation where, you know, they add a depth piece, you know, because I do think they have to protect themselves against injuries. And I don't think
in 6 minutes via Pennsylvania turnpike.
I don't think they're
turn
ready
on the turnpike,
do that
Ray.
Now.
Don't miss it,
Ray. Don't miss your exit. Come on, Ray.
I'm not. But yeah, I think that's a situation that they're going to have to figure out as they go here, and we'll see what happens here in a month or so.
Good stuff, man. Appreciate the time, Ray. Don't crash. I don't know where you're going, but follow your directions. We appreciate it.
Going to Hershey Park, so thanks, Jason.
Yes, take care. All right, Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette. Follow Ray on Twitter or X at RayFit1. Read his stuff at post-gazette.com. What do you think, Limits, about anything?
Well, I'm optimistic about what the offense could look like with Rodgers.
I know, I am too.
And, you know, has he won the press conference over the last couple of weeks? Yes. But at the same time, people have knocked on Rodgers for losing the press conference, for saying all kind of things about teammates and throwing guys under the bus. And, you know, a lot of teammates say that he is a good guy in the locker room and he is somebody who is well-respected in the locker room and is all around a good teammate. I know that's been a frequent criticism of Rodgers. Like, is he going to show up or is he going to be in Egypt? So far, so good. And I think it's been different than what he showed in 2 years with the Jets. Now, it's a starting point. It's not the end-all, be-all. But you have to start somewhere. You have to set a good first impression. And I think Rodgers is doing that so far.
Fan Twitter, it's brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The fan text line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, to me, I've been down there a few times, obviously only one day with Rodgers in the fold. It was a lot better than I expected, and I mean that on myriad levels. The ball's coming out nice. He moves around as good as you can expect for a 41-year-old. The way teammates talk about him, the way he's handling himself, his comments on Pat McAfee. You know, I don't want to say I'm encouraged by this, but I'm kind of encouraged by it. I think it could go a lot worse. Like, I don't think the Steelers are doing something that they're going to regret. I know we had a caller earlier, or maybe it was last night, they kind of both blend together, not understanding why the Steelers are doing this. I understand why the Steelers are doing this. I wish their ceiling was higher. I still think it's 10 or 11 wins and maybe a playoff victory. But I understand why they're doing it. He gives them the best chance to win. He gives them the best chance of having a competent passing offense. Now, I don't think that's complete. I think there's a discussion to be had about who runs opposite DK Metcalf. I don't think it should be Robert Woods. I've got some concerns if it's Calvin Austin or Roman Wilson. If that happens, great. If Roman Wilson exceeds expectations and is just wide open and you have to throw him the ball, fantastic. But we've seen, and I know it's a different sport, a different team, a different way of operating, with the Pirates, what happens when you go into a season with so much hope? There's a lot of hope on the Steelers right now if you look at their wide receivers. I'd like to have a little bit more certainty. And I don't care if that comes in the form of Alan Lazard. I was reading a piece before the show talking about Adam Thielen being an option, trading for Terry McLaurin, which I don't think is going to happen. Gabe Davis, Keenan Allen. There's Amari Cooper. I mean, there's a lot of places they can go. I feel good about some. I don't like some others. What I feel adamant about with the Steelers is that they shouldn't be a finished product. They can't arrive at training camp with this current group. I don't think they've improved enough out wide. One thing I was going to ask Ray Austin that I didn't was, would you ever send your kids to a George Pickens football camp?
Oh boy, I feel like that would come with a little bit of a warning sign before you even sign up.
Yeah.
You know? Very unfortunate, everything that transpired there, but good on Pat Freiermuth, man, for stepping up.
Penn State!
That's right. Penn State's own. That's that Happy Valley hospitality that is stepping up to host the camp and be a guest there and take part in it. And, you know, Pat's done a lot of really cool things for the city. He's been a really good, I think, ambassador for the Steelers, whether it be on the field, whether he's handled himself in the media. He has been frequent at Celebrity Softball when Doran has that event out with the Wild Things. And he's just somebody who I think the Steelers like having around as a very productive player, but also somebody who gives back. And it sets a good example, and it's something that Cam Hayward has done a really good job of. And it's really, I wouldn't say passing the torch from Hayward to Freiermuth. It's good to have multiple guys that can do that, but bridging generations a little bit.
For sure. Absolutely. And good on Freiermuth for doing it. I was railing on this last night on the evening show. As a parent, if my kids played football, my 11-year-old plays flag football. He might start playing tackle in the fall. I'm not sending him to a George Pickens football camp.
No. What would they teach there? Lack of effort on the field, showing up late to Christmas Day games?
I know. Okay, you see that pass over there? No. We're not going to worry about catching that. You want to deck the defensive back on the other side of the end zone. That's what we're trying to do. Excuse me, sir, but your finger gun celebration is not up to par. We're going to have to go through some drills to work on that.
Maybe they'll do how to properly grab a defensive back's face mask at the end of the game and whip it around.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean,
how to fight out of the end zone.
Bunch of six-year-olds with expletives on eye black.
Yes.
See how many places you can put the F word, young boy.
How do you calm down your teammates when they're pouting on the sideline about not getting the ball?
How do you strategically not block? No. The key is to look like you're working. You don't. That's too obvious.
Well, at least
you got to fake.
At least he went into the game and didn't complain that it was too cold.
That's one step above Deontay Johnson. How
yes.
ridiculous was that, Limits?
And it was like a 44-degree day. I think it was in the 30s at the time. Deontay didn't want to put something bad on tape. So where does he go? Up by the lake in Cleveland with lake effect snow, and he's going to be freezing his you-know-what off.
I hope so.
I hope they have a day where it's like 4 degrees and Deontay has to go in there and catch a pass from Kenny Pickett. Kenny Pickett with his gloves on, throwing it to Deontay, who's really cold and has like 4 different layers on, and the Browns lose 27-10.
So do you think John Harbaugh went up to him on the sideline and said something? Like, who do you think was working with Deontay Johnson at that point? And how would you handle that if you were a coach?
The first thing that pops into my mind is, what if Deontay was playing with Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, and Haloti Ngata on his team?
Gosh.
I feel like Ray Lewis would do something not well to Deontay.
I don't want to say he deserved it, because he wouldn't deserve that. But, I mean, man, if I'm the coach of that team, I'm telling Deontay Johnson, there are two places you can go, son. You can go onto that field and play football for us, or you can take your things and go home, because you're not coming back. And that's what they did.
They sent him out and goodbye.
I'd tell him to get in the locker room. I do not want to see you ever again. Get out. You don't want to play. You don't want to play because you're cold. Give me a break.
Yeah, Jason, I stood out there in the Cincinnati game. It was like 20 degrees. Maybe it was a different game. My feet were absolutely freezing. I felt like I was in an ice block. I had 4 pairs of socks on, and it turns out the texters all told me, Limits, you're wearing too many socks. There's no circulation for your feet. That's why your feet are cold.
They're not wrong, Limits.
I didn't realize that.
They're not
wrong. So I guess I should just wear 2 pairs of socks.
Wear 2 pairs of socks, or go to, you know, whatever outdoor clothing company and go buy something warm.
Well, the rest of my body was warm. It was just my feet.
Well, didn't Lieutenant Dan teach you anything? Your feet. Change your socks.
Right. The feet are obviously important.
You've seen Forrest Gump, right?
I have.
Okay.
Poor Lieutenant. Yes. Poor Lieutenant Dan. I was going to make a joke, but I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Don't do that.
No.
Keep your job. All right. So we've kind of steered off path. We're going to get us back there a little bit. I mean, this does relate to something I wanted to talk about, though, Limits, and that I miss coaches who were tougher on players. And here's where this is coming from. James Harrison, he was on this nightcap video stream with TJ Houshmandzadeh. The quote, "With Mike, the biggest thing that I like about him is he's a player's coach," Harrison said. "And the thing that I dislike about him is that he is a player's coach to the point of sometimes it can disrupt because it goes maybe a little too far with allowing certain things with certain players. And then it becomes an issue with that player." So what James Harrison is saying is that Mike Tomlin lets certain guys get away with too much. We know this. Antonio Brown, Martavis, Le'Veon Bell. And I understand coaching pro sports, you're going to coach the best player on your team differently than you're going to coach the worst player on your team. If you're a star, you've earned that. But I'm not sure that being a player's coach is always a good thing. It's like being a parent. Sometimes it's better to be a jerk. Sometimes it's okay if they hate you. And we saw an instance of this recently with Don Kelly and O'Neal Cruz. And before that, with Derek Shelton, I think we saw a failure to be the difficult parent. Mike Sullivan was willing to be the difficult parent. I always liked and respected that about Mike. He had other flaws, and you can criticize him other ways. That's certainly fair. But look at the Penguins' most recent run of success. What did he do? He came in and got in some people's faces. He didn't take any crap. There's nothing wrong with being a coach and being a bit of a jerk. I don't know when we evolved as a society or as a sports society to where coaches need to be friends. They don't. I really like playing for this guy. People will say that, and it's a compliment. I don't know. Maybe I'm too much of an old man, but like that's almost an indictment. You don't always have to love playing for the guy. Now, if you can strike a balance that I really, really respect this person, he's a good person and he has my best interest, but he's not all warm and fuzzy, that's great. You've won. You've got a good coach. But a good coach, a good parent, isn't somebody's friend. I try to explain that to my kids. I don't know if it ever gets through. I'm sure you do some version of the same thing with yourselves. Like, I'm not getting on you because I woke up today and I want to be a jerk. I'm getting on you because I love you and I see your potential and I'm not going to let this slide. It's my job to be your parent. I'm not your parent, I'm your friend. Or I'm not your friend, I'm your parent. And I mean, yeah, you should be able to do both. You should be able to coach somebody. You should be able to relate to them. You are going to treat people differently. I understand that. But it's one of those things in sports, I don't like how far we've slid in this direction where if a coach is a jerk, it's almost like he's in danger of losing the team. And I wonder if that's not why Don Kelly was hesitant to bench O'Neal Cruz. He should have benched O'Neal Cruz on Friday night when Cruz didn't run after that ball, and nobody can convince me otherwise. He didn't bench him because he was probably afraid that he would lose Cruz, and that O'Neal would pout, he'd be sad about it, his feelings would be hurt. I understand trying to relate to players in certain ways, but when you shortchange me on effort, I'm sorry, that's over. I need you to run after the ball. You can screw things up. You can make physical errors. We're going to run after. And to Donnie Kelly's credit, he talked with O'Neal. He didn't let it slide. When O'Neal didn't run the ball out in Milwaukee, O'Neal thought there were a different set of outs, or thought there were two outs. Then you bench him. Great. But I'm just tired of hearing about, we really like playing for this coach. He's a player's coach. I don't want a player's coach. I'll take Bill Cowher. I'll take Jim Leland. I'll take coaches that aren't my friends. I'll take people that might be a little bit prickly, but if they have my best interest at heart, if they have the best interests of the team, if they're going to set a standard and not let people deviate from it, I'm cool with that. I miss it. And I don't know if that's ever coming back. That's a change in our sports society that I just, there are very few. You kind of have to be like Andy Reid, right? Andy Reid can get away with a little bit of that. He's not a, you know, he's a, a player's favorite, but also has the right speed to sort of rein it in. It's a delicate balance, and it's becoming harder. But I don't love, and I bristle when I see this about guys love playing for Mike Tomlin. Maybe if they liked playing for Mike Tomlin a little bit less, the Steelers would be a little bit better. Have a high standard. Don't let stuff tolerate. Don't tolerate things that you shouldn't. There's a lengthy list. Austin and I were talking about Deontay Johnson. You can look at Chase Claypool, Antonio Brown, Martavis Bryant. All of this crap that has happened with the Steelers. It's not a badge of honor to say that you've tolerated it. Sometimes you don't. And the Steelers have lost their patience. I just argue that sometimes that patience could have been lost a little bit sooner.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
And welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. Jason Mackey in for the guys. Austin Bechtold producing. Show flying, as it normally does, over 90 minutes in. Spent the last little segment talking about how much I miss coaches who are a little tougher on players. Something I grew up, another example I should have cited that I didn't. Michelle Therrien. They're soft, Austin. They're soft.
That one of the epic all-time rants of
all-time rant.
You want to talk about all-time rants of the last 25 years? That one's up there.
So good, man. So good. I love it. Coaches that don't tolerate crap from anybody. And I'll never know this, but I will forever fantasize about like what Jim Leland told Don Kelly, one, before his first weekend as a manager, and two, if there were any conversations about like how he handled the O'Neal Cruz situation. You know, on Friday, Donnie doesn't bench Cruz. Does he talk to Leland in the interim? Jim's like, Donnie, you gotta sit him. What do you do? What are you doing, Donnie? You can't let that guy go. Next time he does something, sit. I don't know. Just something I have considered. Not saying it'll happen. Not saying it did happen. Anyway, some more baseball talk I wanted to get through. What the heck happened with Bubba Chandler? I don't know if I have a great answer to this one either. But I was looking at this morning. At the end of May, Bubba Chandler was sitting there, had made 11 starts, 48 and two-thirds innings, a 2.03 ERA, 21 walks, 69 strikeouts, a 1.81 batting average against. Bubba was very good, best pitching prospect in baseball, number two overall prospect. We're all clamoring for him to be up here. A little bit surprised that he's not up here, and the Pirates don't promote him for whatever reason. Maybe there was something they saw inside of that. I sincerely doubt it. Maybe they just wanted to avoid Super 2, delay it a little bit longer. Maybe they didn't think it was worth it giving him an opportunity to win NL Rookie of the Year. By the way, it's interesting, Jacob Mizorowski now. Boy, if that continues, how does that young man not have a chance to win NL Rookie of the Year?
Oh, there's no breakout candidate right now, Jason. It's got to be Mizorowski if he pitches like this.
I mean, you know, 103 and that type of stuff, that's going to be a runaway. And that's one reason I believe they kept Chandler down. Like, there was no breakaway candidate, and he would have an opportunity to win it. Well, since June, Bubba's gone the other way. 4 starts, 9 1/3 innings pitched. One of those, I think he was out in the first inning, a 10.61 ERA, 8 walks, just 5 strikeouts, and a 3.33 batting average against. That's concerning, man. That's concerning, and that doesn't scream to me like, oh, he's just not executing pitches. I mean, those are some bad, bad numbers. That screams to me like somebody who maybe did not take what has happened with him terribly well. Kind of mentally, they've messed with a young pitcher that they really need this season and beyond. Is he frustrated? Is he letting too much of that creep into his game? I have no way of knowing that. But I know that Bubba Chandler, through 2 months, was absolutely dominant, and in June, he's been terrible. And now, him getting up here, it's not a matter of service time. It's not a matter of the business of baseball. It's a matter of he just needs to pitch better. You just need to get him here. Now, to transition, I had Jeff Passan on last night on the evening show, and he said he did expect Bubba Chandler to be up here, quote, sooner than later. Maybe that was just a general assumption, because I think a lot of us still expect that as well, but it was one of many things that Jeff said with me. I want to go through some of those takeaways. One of the first ones, and this didn't, I didn't expect to ask this so early, but it was about the idea of Bob Nutting selling. And he said, the first thing I asked Jeff was, are you surprised that for a national insider, you end up talking about the Pirates as much as you do? And he said a little bit, but a lot of it comes from Pat McAfee having him on. Pat's obviously from Pittsburgh, and he wants to talk about the Pirates and Bob Nutting selling. And I said, do you think that's a possibility? He said, well, maybe at some point in the near future. He said he's heard nothing. Nothing has crossed his radar that would suggest that Bob Nutting is selling the Pirates. And he said some other teams have not really been in a position where you were expecting sales, and they happen too. But no, quote, there's no indication at this point that that is in the offing. I think we sort of know that, but again, just interesting to hear Jeff Passan say it. I asked Jeff what he sees when he looks at the Pirates. Because we look at the Pirates and we see a lot of the nuance. We see the things day to day that bother us, the lack of offense, of course, pretty good rotation, confusion with where they're at with Ben Cherington, a little bit of a change with Donnie Kelly, etc. Well, what he sees with the Pirates, somebody that has more of a national perspective, I see a team whose leader in slugging percentage right now is a 38-year-old designated hitter. That's not the sort of plan you want to go win baseball games and make postseason appearances. And Jeff's absolutely right. And a big part of our conversation was the Pirates' offense, their lack of offense, what they can do to fix it. And Passan didn't have any great answers. I don't think anybody does, other than making some changes philosophically, coaching-wise, get better players, a lot of it. I mean, it's not overly complicated, but it is something everybody's very much aware of how bereft of offense the Pirates are across Major League Baseball. It's why I said in the first hour this trade deadline is so important for them, because they have to figure that out. I asked Jeff, third takeaway, what he expects out of the Pirates at the trade deadline and what he's been hearing. And I cited a few names: Andrew Heaney, Caleb Ferguson, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Mitch Keller, David Bednar. And he said basically all of those guys are being talked about. The only two, you know, basically everybody's in play. They'll have conversations about anybody except for Paul Skeens and O'Neill Cruz, which is right about where I'm at with the Pirates. I think the trade Skeens talk was silly and remains silly. It's not going to happen. I wouldn't trade O'Neill Cruz. I don't think that makes any sense for the Pirates. I think there's a legitimate concern that they could get burned. I still don't think, and this is sort of astounding given his age and everything else, that they don't quite know what he is. And if you cut bait right now, I don't think you're going to get maximum value, and I think there's the possibility of him figuring it out in another place. And they've had that happen far too many times, and I don't think they want to see that happen again. So that was Passan on the trade deadline. I also asked him Bob's reputation around baseball and what other people think about it. I think he's seen as somebody who has a passionate fan base, who has arguably the most beautiful stadium in Major League Baseball and completely wastes it. I saw this firsthand during the last playoff run. Pirates fans want to go to that ballpark. Passan continues, it's a hard thing to come to terms with as a fan. If we have everything in place, if we built the stadium and have our passion, where's the reciprocation? What are you giving back to us? Why don't we have a team that's worthy of our stadium and of our fans? It's a super reasonable question to ask. It's one that Bob Nutting has no answer to at this point. Other owners see that. There's a pocket of owners out there that want the competition. They don't want people just going to cash revenue sharing checks and not reinvesting it into their team. This group of owners wants a vibrant baseball community in cities like Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, and Kansas City. And where I'll take that is I don't have access to the Pirates books, and everybody can feel however they want about the Pirates and what they've spent and what they haven't spent, and I wish they'd spend more on major league players. I wish they'd spend their money more effectively. That has been a miss, especially on offense. Ben Cherington hasn't done a good enough job in that. The Pirates do like to spend on processes, and that's not a defense of them. I do understand when you're a small market team, it makes more sense to put things in place that are repeatable. as opposed to buying a player who has a finite window with your organization. And the problem with the Pirates is that they haven't done a good enough job in that either. And they've been too patient with it. There's an intersection of those things with Ben Cherington. This offseason is a perfect example. The Pirates needed offense, and Ben didn't spend all of his allotted baseball operations budget on players. Spent it on analytics, on processes. That's happened. And it hasn't resulted in improved development. It hasn't resulted in improved international or domestic scouting and drafting and signing. It's not good. It's not good. And the last thing was more about baseball writ large and whether we're going to see a salary cap and a floor. And Limits and I were talking off air about this. I think it's something that is near and dear to both of our hearts. And I wish Passan's answer was different. I think he has more intel than either of us do about how other people are thinking. Some of what Jeff said to that when I asked, will we see a cap and a floor? I worry that the 2027 Major League Baseball season is in peril, Passan said. I'm not sure if the timing is necessarily right for Major League Baseball to go after a cap and a floor in this collective bargaining agreement, just because the media rights deals have not been taken care of. That could be a 2028 issue. I foresee a cap and a floor being likelier the next time around, but I don't discount it. Now, it's a tricky thing when you talk about a cap and a floor in baseball. Us in this position, we would love a cap and a floor, I think. Passan and I have texted about this and the perception in Pittsburgh, and he knows how this market feels, and I don't think he's against the fundamental ideas of it. I do think he comes more from a big market, agent, player side, and those people do not want a cap and a floor because they're skeptical of how much that's going to benefit players. One of the things that Jeff said, any sport that tries to cap the potential earnings of the people who make it up, I don't like that. I get that. I'm not out to try to screw the players either, but I do think Major League Baseball should sort of take a step back and think how people view it. I wish baseball was able to see what it is not. And in America, football is king. National TV contracts, what are our rituals? What do we follow the most? It's the NFL. The NFL has our attention. Baseball used to be that. It is no longer that anymore. But baseball can still be a greater part of the conversation. I think one of the things holding it back is the whacked out economic system. And I also disagreed with Jeff on this final point. I think Austin feels the same way, that if they did have a cap and a floor, he doesn't believe that would change things fundamentally between the Pirates and the Dodgers. Here's a quote. Suggesting that a cap would put the Dodgers and the Pirates on a level playing field is comedy. I don't think there's anything that can put them on a level playing field or even close to a level playing field, because what the Dodgers would do, if there was a cap in place, they'd just take that money and spend it in other areas that would allow them to be a better baseball team than the Pittsburgh Pirates. So I think what Passan is saying is they would spend more money on processes, infrastructure, scouting, travel, minor leagues, et al. All of these areas that aren't capped. And my answer to that is go right ahead. If you have it, spend it. If you're in a position to do that, awesome. But I think it's a better overall product if the amount of money you can spend on major league players, which you are admitting is the most important part of the machine, if that is tighter, that makes more sense. And if the Dodgers want to stay in better hotels, have a better spring training facility, have more robust minor league operations, have more robust scouting and analytics departments, good for them. That's a luxury they can afford because of their brand, because of their TV market, because of what they're bringing in. But I do think there would be a fundamental difference, and a difference that Major League Baseball would benefit from, by having a cap and a floor on Major League players.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Limits, where do you come down on that? You were pro cap and floor, right?
I'm significantly pro cap and pro floor. And, you know, baseball, when I compare it to the other sports, look at the NFL, Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Would he still be in Kansas City after his rookie contract if the system economically was like baseball? No. Would Josh Allen be staying in Buffalo? No. Would Jordan Love, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers be in Green Bay? No. That's right. Just the harsh reality of it. And that's what makes football so great as well, because everyone has a fair shot. And teams are better, yes, because they're coaching and they're developing and their draft is better, but also because there's player retention of the players that you did draft and develop. Where a lot of the times in baseball, that is not nearly the case because there is no cap and there is no floor. And it's not the same level playing field that the Yankees have compared to the Pirates in Cincinnati. Sure, the Pirates, Cincinnati, Kansas City, the Cleveland, those types of teams can take extra steps. But this is an apples to oranges conversation compared to the Jets and the Giants, who have found a way to screw it up over the last 10 years when Kansas City's thriving and the NFL is fine because of it. Like, it doesn't matter that big names are in Kansas City. Sure, I'm sure baseball is thrilled and over the moon that the Stars are in New York, the Stars are in LA, the Stars are playing for the Cubs right now in Chicago. But there is also a blueprint that shows they can still thrive in other markets and still be successful and be captivating.
Yeah, and getting into the playoffs is not the same as having a legitimate chance at winning a championship. And
no.
I think that's what the NFL does. It gives more teams and a greater variety of teams a chance to win a championship. Baseball, you might have the odd team that sneaks in, and there are teams that can circumvent that, sure, with good player management, like the Brewers do it, the Guardians do it, the Rays do it. But when's the last time one of those teams won a World Series? When it comes down to winning a championship, it's almost always the team with the bigger budget.
Yeah, Cleveland, 1945.
Yep.
Sure, they had runs in the 90s. And sure, 2016 was probably the best World Series that we've seen in the last 20 years or so. Kansas City had one great year. Last year, they were good. Look where they are now. Where, outside of a couple years for the Yankees, it's sustained success. The Dodgers, over the last 10 years, completely dominant. They've won, what, like 7 division titles in a row?
Yep. Yep.
So you see like the Bills and the Chiefs dominating divisions, and those are not big market sizes. Those are still captivating. So some of that argument, it's just mind-boggling to me. And like, you can make the same argument about the NBA. Sure, this might have been a boring finals. I thought it was fun.
I thought it was great.
Game 7, sure. Is SGA as captivating as LeBron? No. LeBron in Cleveland was exciting. LeBron in Miami was exciting. The OKC, Westbrook, KD, Harden teams were exciting. San Antonio had a dynasty for how many years? So don't make this big market thing has to be the end-all, be-all, where, you know, we have to make sure we cater and pander to them.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this is. And that's why I don't think there's going to be a cap and a floor, because the big markets run Major League Baseball.
Yep.
It's unfortunate. I agree with Passan, begrudgingly, that I don't think it's going to happen after December 2026, when the current CBA expires. I do think the 2027 season is in peril. I don't think that's going to help Major League Baseball, and I'm not sure if they're going to come out of it with the revamped economic system that the sport needs. And that's unfortunate. You know, I am a test case for the NBA. I was not into it that much. I thought the postseason was intriguing. It caught my attention. It caught my attention because of the competition, because you have markets like, what, Indiana? Oklahoma City? Like, these aren't traditional powers. They're also getting in on the mix, and they're playing a palatable style of basketball. I'd love to see that with Major League Baseball. And you should be selling players. You should be selling stars. You should be selling success. And instead, Major League Baseball is selling the big markets. The big markets run things. And it's good for the 8 or 9 teams that are wealthy. For the other ones, not so much. And that's not making an excuse for the Pirates, that's just reality. The Pirates have to have a lot of things go right to figure it out. They obviously haven't. That's a separate discussion we have here. But I would absolutely like to have a cap and a floor. And that's a discussion. And we can take some calls on this if you want to weigh in, 412-928-9370. That in Pittsburgh, I think I'll find a lot of agreement. If I would have this discussion in Chicago, New York, L.A., those teams, those markets, they don't want to see a cap. They don't want to be told no. And I understand that. And I think when it comes down to it, players don't want a cap. Rich owners don't want a cap. The people who want a cap and will maybe begrudgingly accept the floor are the small market owners, and they don't wield enough power. And at the end of the day, it's easier for them to try to thread the very small needle and then basically play the victim the rest of the time and take whatever money they can and revenue sharing and just have business operate the way it is. It's easier to keep things status quo. It's not best for the fans. It's not best for the sport, but it is best for those involved. The 50-minute mark on the Fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. And weather. It's cloudy today with a high of Sidney Crosby, 87 degrees. Good golf weather for Bob. Fan weather is brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal services. Top this off by going out to the Fan hotline. Brian in New Brighton wants to talk about the Pirates and a cap. What's up, Brian?
How's it going?
Good. What's on your mind?
I have two really quick things. One, I think essentially that is what you were just talking about is where the big frustration with me with the Pirates are, is they do have to thread the needle. And with having and developing the pitching they do, it's almost essentially having a quarterback on a rookie salary right now, that if you would have just took the revenue sharing money and put it a little bit towards a bat, you hit the play. This is their right at that place where they could thread that needle with their pitching staff, and they just completely dropped the ball and refused to even do that.
Yeah, and I mean, what they counted on just didn't happen. They counted on a bunch of internal improvement that they thought they were going to spur through analytics and coaching and development, and that hasn't worked out. It's why I think you should spend on players during these moments. You know, it's better to go by a first baseman than an analytics wing. And I agree with you. I'm sure that's incredibly frustrating as a fan.
Well, and I think when it comes to the salary cap in general, they tried to resolve this by revenue sharing and letting the Dodgers go spend whatever they want and share with them. But when you have owners that won't, that, like you said, invest in other things, or, you know, the question I have, and I don't grasp this small market thing. Whenever your Pirates, or I think it was Tampa Bay, they're talking about is worth over $1 billion. That tells me that you're making money off of them if you're able to sell a franchise without even a stadium for over $1 billion, let alone something like the Pirates. So, yeah, they don't have the money essentially that you look like from coming in from the Dodgers, but you're still worth that amount of money. So you have to be making some type of money to sell your franchise, or am I wrong for that thought process?
No, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I mean, that's one of the arguments that I have about Bob Nutting selling. People love to say that he's making a lot of money. I don't think that he's making money hand over fist on the Pirates, but I know that he can make a lot of money if he sold, and you could go disappear and be anonymous and, you know, have your sale be worth upwards of $1.5 billion, maybe closer to two with the Rays valuation that you're talking about. I'd take that and move on, man. That sounds pretty good to me. But yeah, I mean, I think what you're looking at there, Brian, and thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We're going to move on. When teams are valued like that, they look at the possibility, what it can be. You know, the Pirates can be very profitable. Now, Nutting for years has operated in a way that was extremely cautious, and I think that's a valid criticism of him. And there's a lot of criticisms of Bob Nutting, but he's been too slow to take chances or overextend himself. And he will say it's trying to preserve the betterment of the Pirates or trying to grow this thing logically or whatever. But if you have somebody who doesn't look at it as much as a business, if you have somebody who looks at it as sort of a plaything, and they want to, you know, take some risks and try to get people in there, and you hire the right people, all of a sudden you've got something really magical if it works, and you're going to make a lot of money. And I don't understand why the Pirates haven't taken that risk. Brian on the north side wants to talk about a cap and a floor. What's up, Brian?
Hey, how you all doing?
Good. How are you?
This is good. This is Brian O'Neill. I used to work with you.
Oh, what's up, Brian? Great to hear from you, yeah, man.
So I'm tapping the floor. But the only reason I don't like it when Major League Baseball is blamed for the Pirates' problems. The Pirates' problems begin and end with the ownership and the management of the team. Since PNC Park opened, there's never been a time in baseball history where there's been more parity. 16 different teams have won the World Series since PNC Park opened. Five more have been there. You talk about when was the last time the Nationals won it in 2019. The Rays were in the World Series in 2020. Everybody goes, and yet the Pirates, in a division with three comparable size metro areas, Milwaukee, Cincinnati, and St. Louis, and another that only goes to the World Series every 100 years or so, is the only one not to have won the division.
Yep.
In 30 years. Whose fault is that?
The Pirates. I'm not saying anything otherwise. I'm not disagreeing with you, man. You're 100% right. I think both can be true. Yeah. I think you can blame it. The Pirates' problems are their own, but I think Major League Baseball would be better with a cap and a floor.
I do too, because then Nutting would have to at least try to compete.
Yep.
And he doesn't right now.
Yep.
So
I agree with you, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate your thoughts over the years, man. You're the best.
All right. Take care, brother.
Thanks, Brian. Brian O'Neill. It's a special surprise. Brian loves baseball, man, and always has, and he was great to me when he was at the Post-Gazette, just somebody I grew up reading, big Brian O'Neill fan. But, yeah, I mean, both can be true. I thought I was clear about that. Maybe I wasn't as clear as I should be. Like, the Pirates should be blamed for their own problems. Like, it's certainly within the boundaries of common sense for them to put a competitive product on the field. I talk about this a lot with Bob Nutting, and this is, again, not an excuse for Bob Nutting. Just look at the numbers. Don't look at the payroll for the next 10 seconds. That's all I'm asking you. Don't look at the payroll. This will be 19 seasons, and they've had four winning records. That's just not good enough. That's not good enough. I don't care who you are. If you're the Rooney family, if you're Lemieux and Burkle, if you're FSG, if you're anybody who's ever owned a team, that's not good enough. Major League Baseball has its problems. It can be better. I wish it saw itself a different way. I have strong feelings about a cap and a floor. All that stuff should happen. But that's not saying, oh, poor Pirates. No, they have access to put a winning product on the field. Don't cry poor. Don't say, oh, this is all stacked against us. No, nobody's saying that. The Cleveland Guardians do it. The Tampa Bay Rays do it. Other teams, like Brian's pointing out, they're able to do it. They make smart personnel decisions, and the Pirates haven't made those. And that's infuriating.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.